This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
With empty hands, I still know how to use them, but the miles made other plans.
You know, we got a fish fry coming up this Friday at the Knights of Columbus Hall in Cottleville. We've been at that location a couple of different times. We'd love to see you there. We get started at 3 o'clock. They don't usually start, you know, serving the food till closer to 5. But this is one soon. I think you can verify this. The lines get started pretty early.
Oh, they do. Especially at ones, well, you can tell which yeah. ones are preferred, and this is one.
This is a big one. It is a big one. We've had a lot of fun out there, so we look forward to that. We will, I think, visit with Steve Ellman, the St. Charles County executive. I believe he's going to swing by for a visit on the roundtable panel. Jane will be there, former State Senator Jeff Smith, and Nick Schorr, who I don't know if that's his district out there, but it's very close to where he represents folks in Missouri. We got big news today because they did send the police takeover bill to the governor awaiting his signature. My expectation would be that signature might come before the roundtable on Friday. So that's definitely one of the topics. Coming up a little bit later this hour, Jim Talent, former U.S. Senator, I have some questions to ask about Ukraine and some international issues. I'm curious about what he would say about DOGE as well, because obviously he was involved in the United States Senate and, you know, someone who was very keenly aware of budgeting and how that works a couple of decades ago, but things have gotten out of control in Washington. We'll get Jim's perspective coming up. The Players' Championship starts tomorrow, and I mentioned this was kind of cool. Colin Morikawa, one of the PGA pros, his caddy, because they let the caddies play, I think, on some of the warm-up rounds, hit a hole-in-one on the island.
So cool.
Green. It was really fun to see that. So Dan will have a preview, and I have audio cut of the day as well. We were hoping to get Dr. Scott Polk, who is with the University of Missouri Extension, because I wanted to talk about the situation with bird flu.
But you might have him.
Oh, look at that. I was just about...
Oh, no. No.
No, they say no?
That's flipped.
Oh, all right. We're just going to flip it. Is that who's on hold right now?
Yep.
Look at that. You know,
nice,
that's what we like. We like guests who are flexible, and that certainly qualifies for Jim Talent, former United States Senator. How are you, Jim? Thanks for being flexible here this afternoon. Great to have you.
Well, anytime I can help out, you know, I want to.
I want to get into Ukraine and some of the things that are going on there, but let me just get your thoughts on DOGE. I'm very curious. You were in the United States Senate, you were a member of Congress, you know about budgeting, and obviously this is an administration that promised a lot of this stuff, but they are taking, you know, the chainsaw. It's not necessarily the scalpel, even though last week President Trump said maybe moving forward the scalpel approach would be better. Now, Jim, I like this because I feel like I've been waiting since I first voted for President Reagan in 1984 for things along these lines to happen. I've been a fan of smaller government philosophically, so I know that there's some casualties, there's some shrapnel that's being felt across the country. But what's your take on how this is being, you know, achieved right now?
Generally, my take is very favorable. And I actually, this has made me rethink a little bit, because when I think about the budget deficit and what we're going to need to do to fix it, I focused very much on the need to constrain cost increases in the safety net programs, which, of course, is very difficult to do. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, et cetera. But what DOGE has showed me is, and I should have realized this, is that the government has been basically revving unclutched, if you will, for so long that there are significant amounts of money that we can save in the discretionary budget just by getting rid of what basically everybody would agree, except, you know, us fringe groups, is just waste. You know what I mean? So I think this has real potential. My concern is applying it in the same way they've been doing it to the Department of Defense, because, and we could spend the whole segment on this if you want, but the Department of Defense really does things all the time, even in peacetime. It's 1.1 million people just in uniform there, and they are constantly moving all over the world, even in steady state or peacetime type mission. So the point is, you can get a lot of waste out of the Department of Defense, but we don't want to do it by going in and breaking everything and then trying to put it together. See what I mean?
I do see what you mean. And one of the things that I hear, and let me kind of illustrate that point maybe a little differently, because I hear a lot of complaints. I even have some audio that I might share a little bit later in the audio cut of the day. My friend Scott Jennings on Abby Phillips' show last night, and they're basically making the case, I've heard this from the left quite a bit, that all you guys are doing is going after programs that you don't like. It has nothing to do with waste, fraud, or abuse, which I feel is untrue. And then they always say, well, we're going to go after defense as well. And that's fine. I think that's fair game to look at fraud and abuse and waste. But there's one big difference, and I think you have great appreciation for this. Our national defense is a constitutional responsibility. It's something the federal government should be doing.
Yeah, it's constitutionally different. It's also, just as a practical matter, extremely important. And there are also lives on the line. I mean, this is a department that is supposed to be able to, and basically can, perform any one of literally 40 or 50 combat missions any place in the world. I mean, and I'm all for DOGE going in and working with Hegseth and working with the undersecretaries who are going to get confirmed, because there is a lot of waste. I mean, I know that as well as anybody. But as I said, you have to be more careful how you do it there.
Yeah.
You know, we can't just like go in and say, okay, we're going to stop all the submarine maintenance while we look for waste. No, we actually have to maintain the attack submarines. They're on a schedule. You know, if you delay, it backs everything else up. So my point is, I don't want to focus on the one area of concern. I'm basically pretty pleased with it. You do notice that the president said once he got the cabinet confirmed, he has a cabinet meeting, looks at Elon, says, Elon's doing a great job. Now you got to work with these people instead of telling them what to do, which is the right thing.
Yeah.
He's got his people in place. They all want to do what Elon wants to do. They have the authority and the responsibility. So Musk is going to have to work with these people, which is the right thing.
Well, and I think a lot of that, you know, I was a fan. I don't know if you read the reporting, but the New York Times had a pretty big piece on Friday afternoon about a cabinet meeting that took place last Wednesday, I guess a week ago, where it got a little hot because Rubio and, Sean Duffy, the transportation secretary in particular, were pushing back on some of this stuff, and Trump was backing his cabinet members. I think that's positive, right? Hash it out, figure it out right now.
I suspect some of the cabinet members, and I would do this. You know, there was a long period of time I wanted to be the Secretary of Defense. And I've talked with Hegseth when he was in confirmation. I think he's going to do really well. And I'm imagine he has probably had a conversation with the president where he said, look, I know you want Elon to get waste. I want to also. I am definitely going to work with him. We want his ideas. But, you know, you have put me in charge of the department, Mr. President, and there's one commander in chief, it's you, and there's one secretary of defense, it's me, it's not Elon Musk. And I guess as Trump laughed and said, you're absolutely right about that. So they're going to work through the people who have the authority and have been nominated and confirmed to do it. But I think they've already gotten a lot of waste, and they're going to get more. And who doesn't want to get that?
Well, apparently every Democrat in the Senate except for John Fetterman. That's my answer.
I mean, it's like they are going to discover things where we look at it and go, my gosh, I mean, we're paying for that.
I know.
So anyway,
it's really, some of the reaction on the left is really stunning to some of this. All right, so let's move to Ukraine. And let me simplify before I ask you some questions about the ceasefire and, you know, what might happen next. Let me simplify my position. And I think my position really speaks for a lot of the American people right now. We're not experts on this stuff. I understand the danger that Putin and Russia, you know, certainly poses to that part of the planet. But I also see a lot of money that's being thrown toward this effort, whether it's military, whether it's cash, it doesn't matter. $350 million, $150 million. I don't know. The numbers have been a little debatable. But I don't see this, and I've told you this before, and I don't think anything has changed my mind. A lot of us don't see a path here to a victory for Ukraine. And I think that's where President Trump is. And he's saying, let's end the bloodshed. I'm certainly not in favor of bending over and giving Putin everything that he wants without conditions. But we do have a ceasefire that's announced today. Zelensky has crawled back a little bit and apologized to Trump. So where does this take us now?
Well, I think everything you just said is completely correct. I think the president has realized that the only possible alternative going forward now that makes any sense is a peace agreement. Look, Mark, if you can divide the American people, indeed the West, into three groups of people with regard to this. So there were those who felt we didn't have an interest in Ukraine and that maybe even Putin had been provoked a little bit by our policy regarding NATO, and they didn't want to get involved at all. And then there were people like me who felt, well, this is an opportunity to diminish the power and influence of an adversary of the United States, which is Russia. And so we should help the Ukrainians do that. And then the third group of people said, well, we should help the Ukrainians to save democracy and stand up for international law. Now, the point is, whatever group you're in, continuing the war with the situation on the battlefield, what it is and what it's likely to be, doesn't make any sense. They're conducting an attrition warfare, trying to wear each other down, fighting over really basically a few kilometers of ground. It's like World War One with drones. So peace is in everybody's interest. And Trump has now got the process back on board because he's got Zelensky with him. The next step is getting Putin to the table and willing to agree to something reasonable, and he's not going to get his maximalist demands either. So I think the effect of proposing this ceasefire is to sort of put Putin on the griddle, because if he agrees to it, he stopped fighting, and it's going to be very difficult for him to start fighting again. If he doesn't agree to it, then it's plain he's the one who doesn't want peace. And then I think you'll see the Trump administration starting to pressure him.
That's what.
And there are leverage points. There are leverage points we have. But the president said something, I think it was last week, when Putin went after the Ukrainian infrastructure, and the president talked about going after the banks. Listen, if we target the banks and we target the oil revenue, we can hurt Russia, and Putin knows that. So I think this process is back on now. I think Zelensky gets the joke, and I think the president's going to achieve this, but it's going to be difficult. He's not going to get it. You know, the president will talk about, I'll get it in 24 hours. No, that's not going to happen. But I think we're going to get it.
All right, well, here's what he said.
We have a full ceasefire if it kicks in. We have to see. It's up to Russia now. But we've had a good relationship with both parties, actually. And we'll see. We'll be knowing people are going to Russia right now as we speak. And hopefully we can get a ceasefire from Russia.
He went on to say he expects to talk to Putin this week.
President, will you talk to Vladimir Putin about this ceasefire deal? Do you think you need to have a conversation with him to get the Russians
I'll
to agree?
I'll talk to Vladimir Putin, yeah.
When will
I want to get, look, that's the other, it takes two to tango, as they say, right? So hopefully he'll also agree. And I really think that would be 75% of the way. The rest is getting it documented and, you know, negotiating land positions, etc.
So you'll talk to him this week?
Can you simplify some of the land positions as he referred to it? I mean, you don't want to be in a situation where you have no concessions from Russia and Putin, right? So how does that work itself out? Can you explain it where someone like me would understand it, Jim?
Sure. Well, the deal that Trump has been driving towards, and I'll just 2 years ago, I suggested something along these lines, is because Russia has been winning, quote unquote, at enormous cost, they're going to get a little more Ukrainian territory. They're not going to get everything they want. They want all four of the Western provinces. I probably could name them, but Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson, I think. They want that. They want Ukraine to agree never to rearm, and they want the United States and the West to agree never to sell any arms to Ukraine. They're not going to get those maximalist demands. So he's going to have to give that up. He's going to get a little more territory in return for peace. And then what Ukraine gets is assistance in rebuilding the country. Now, Ukraine wants a formal security guarantee. So here's the thing, Mark, okay? It's power, not promises, that guarantee security. In other words, if Ukraine can link to the West the way it's always wanted to do, if the Europeans will rebuild their defenses the way they say they're going to, then Ukraine is going to have effective security going forward. If those things do not happen, the guarantee isn't worth the paper it's written on. We gave them a guarantee 30 years ago, the Budapest Memorandum. And Putin did what he did anyway. Because You see what I'm saying?
Yep, absolutely.
It's peace through strength, not peace through promises. And I bet anything that Rubio has been saying this to Zelensky, saying we're going to protect your sovereignty, but you don't need a guarantee to do that. And in fairness, if you're a mediator, which Trump is, you can't put your thumb on the scale of either side. You're trying to get a deal. You can't expect Putin to agree to a deal that lets Ukraine into NATO.
No,
I mean, he can't do that.
I think that that's certainly been ruled out. How do you, when I was listening to President Trump, he was with the Prime Minister of Ireland today, and one of the things that came up, and I'll be honest, Jim, I don't have any kind of understanding of this, but he was pointing out some of the challenges in working with the leaders in Europe. He sat there with the Irish Prime Minister, but he mentioned the European Union. So how does the European Union, and what does that body actually do to kind of play into all of this? Because it's not like you have Macron and, Starmer, all these guys on the same page. They have this European Union representation as well, right?
Yes, they do. And this is one of the problems with the EU, is what is the relationship between the EU and the countries that are in the EU on questions relating to security? And so what I will say is both the EU officials and European leaders, they will spout off and they will promise things and say things that they believe in, flowery statements. There's no action there, which is the problem. In other words, they're talking about how important it is to protect Ukraine. At the same time, as they, for example, they're buying more oil from Putin now than they in value than they're sending to Ukraine in aid. Their militaries, they've allowed them to decline to the point. I wrote a column about this. It was now almost 10 years ago. The German army was training with broomsticks because they didn't have rifles.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So, and this is the point Vance has made. It's the point Trump made in the first term. He said, look, if you want to be strong, if you want the continent to have influence, get access to reliable, affordable energy. Stop letting in millions of people who are destroying the social cohesion of your country, and rebuild your militaries to a decent level. And they got angry at him, and they got angry at Vance Vance said, stop arresting your people because they're speaking.
Some of that is so ridiculous. And by the way, you've kind of led me into something for tomorrow. I have Madeline Kearns on tomorrow, Jim, who's with the Free Press now. And she wrote this piece last week about this grandma who was arrested in Scotland by the speech police. And it is stunning. And she's going to share that story tomorrow. Hey, since I have you, let me ask you this question on the CR. We're looking like maybe another government shutdown will kick in at midnight on Friday. Here's Chuck Schumer this afternoon.
Republicans chose a partisan path, drafting their continuing resolution without any input. From congressional Democrats. Because of that, Republicans do not have the votes in the Senate. Our caucus is unified on a clean April 11th CR that will keep the government open and give Congress time to negotiate bipartisan legislation that can pass. I hope our Republican colleagues will join us to avoid a shutdown on Friday.
Okay, I don't know that that's going to happen. So where is this going to take us?
It is a clean CR. I mean, I don't think there's... Look, I haven't read all 99 pages, which, by the way, very slimmed down for one of these things. But I think it is a CR. I think there's some additional provisions in there for the Department of Defense, which are very good. I'll get a technical. I mean, when the Congress doesn't pass an actual appropriations bill, for the Department of Defense, as opposed to a continuing resolution. It affects the department's authorities to begin new contracts or reprogram monies. It's really not good at all. And, you know, again, we were talking before, the Department of Defense, that's those kinds of things are important. So they've given them some extra authorities in this, and they provided them some money to make up for they're getting a little bit more of an increase, not enough, but they're getting a little bit more of an increase. I think it is a clean CR. I think when the House was able to pass it, it really put the Democrats behind the eight ball in the Senate. So they can do this if they want, but then this is Schumer's shutdown.
Yeah, right. And, they're going to get tagged with the blame. And
well,
I guess they're willing to do that because they're so full of TDS. Look, you got like AOC. This is on the House side, of course, but AOC and Jayapal are out there saying this.
They should refuse to allow this bill to pass in the Senate.
If they don't,
I think there's going to be huge backlash from across the country. And I think all of them will have to deal with the consequences of that.
The Republicans have the White House, the Senate and the House. If they want to do this, and if they want to screw over the American people, they can do this with their votes and their party. I do not believe that Democrats should participate.
So there you go. That's the advice. Look, these are people that thought that everyone should have walked out during that speech last week, right, when Congressman Green gets up there. So they're going to take their stand. It's the resistance, Senator Towne. It's all about the resistance. You know that, right?
Well, I honestly think a lot of Democrats don't like this. It's a difficult position for them to be in because there are elements in the base of the Democratic Party that want the resistance. But, you know, it's hearkening back to the first term when they just really refused to recognize that Donald Trump's the president of the United States and deserves to be treated in that, you know, as if he is. So as my understanding, and this is not something I follow real closely, is that they wanted all kinds of restrictions in the bill on Trump's authority to do things and run the executive branch. Of course, the Republicans weren't going to agree to that. I mean, they wouldn't have agreed to it if the Republicans had sought it for Biden. So I think it is a clean CR. It doesn't bring in a lot of baggage and a lot of other issues. It just keeps the government going so that the Congress can turn to the other business of the people, primarily the reconciliation bill. So, look, it's their choice.
I thought the business of the people was selling Teslas for Elon Musk. That's what the Democrats are also trying to tell us right now. Unbelievable.
I think Musk will figure out how to
he'll be fine. Right. All right. Hey, we had some gremlins in the phone system here that sounded a little weird just a short time ago. So I'm going to let you go. But always great. Thank you, Jim Towne. I appreciate it.
You are welcome.
All right. Take care. Audio cut of the day is still coming up.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
So you have a bunch of people in New York City, hundreds of demonstrators marching in downtown in Manhattan because they're upset about Mahmoud Khalil, who was detained by the Trump administration. This is the Palestinian activist, pro-terrorism dude at Columbia University. The question is whether or not he should be kicked out of the country. He is not a resident. He is a green card holder, and he supports Hamas, and he's very vocal about that. Here's Leo Terrell.
Supporting Hamas is contrary to American foreign policy. There is overwhelming evidence to remove this foreign national from America.
This is another one of those situations where this guy hates this country. He has made it very clear his intentions against the U.S., pro-Hamas, against Western civilization, and he's being held up by the left as some hero. This is what's fascinating to me. You know, like, the people on the left, they hold up George Floyd, Mike Brown. These are their heroes, right? This guy is their hero. How out of touch with the American people you have to be? If you take the case of Mahmoud Khalil, now, I'm not, you know, dismissing freedom of speech issues here. We can talk about those. But you take this particular guy and you put this up for a vote with the country, I think 90% of them, if not more, would say kick his ass out of here because he deserves to have his ass kicked out of here. But they're protesting for this dude.
Mahmoud is our family. Mahmoud is our brother. We are family. We're showing right now that we're going to be here no matter what, and we're never going to back down.
They are feeling threatened. Not by Palestinian flags, not by kafirs, not by encampments, but by the presence of ICE on our campus.
They're upset that ICE is removing people who either are not legally here in this country or like this Mahmoud Khalil guy who led all the student protests has absolutely expressed disdain, hatred, and violence on this country. So they took him into custody. He was born in Syria. He's Palestinian. He's legally a permanent resident because of a green card. He's married to an American citizen, but let's still kick him out. Here's Tom Homan.
Free speech has limitations, but when you go to a college campus protesting and taking over buildings and damaging property and handing out leaflets for Hamas, who is a terrorist organization, coming to this country either on a visa or becoming a resident alien is a great privilege. But there are rules associated with that.
Yeah, it's a privilege. And you can't go on to, and it's kind of interesting, you know, this is being exposed at Columbia University. They have half of their enrollment is foreign students. He organizes, these are not just free speech protests, these are violent protests. Some of these protests prevented Jewish students at Columbia from going to class or other universities across the country. These are Jewish students who are, in some cases, backed into a corner and chased down. It was horrible. Do people not remember what happened a year ago? That was all happening a year ago. Here's Senator Kennedy from Louisiana.
I happen to believe that if foreign students want to come here and learn and maybe stay and assimilate and become Americans, I'm happy to have it. But I'm not happy to pay for them to come here to hate on America. And I'm not happy to have universities support that while at the same time taking American taxpayer dollars. I hate the smell of hypocrisy in the morning.
That was Senator Kennedy on with Laura last night after I left the air. And here's Marco Rubio on this. And I there's not even a hesitation for a moment about revoking these visas in my mind.
When you come to the United States as a visitor, which is what a visa is, which is how this individual entered this country, on a visitor's visa, okay, you are here as a visitor. We can deny you that visa. We can deny you that if you tell us when you apply, hi, I'm trying to get into the United States on a student visa. I am a big supporter of Hamas, a murderous, barbaric group that kidnaps children, that rapes teenage girls, that takes hostages, that allows them to die in captivity, that returns more bodies than live hostages. If you tell us that you are in favor of a group like this, and if you tell us when you apply for your visa, and by the way, I intend to come to your country as a student, and rile up all kinds of anti-Jewish student, anti-Semitic activities. I intend to shut down your universities. If you told us all these things when you applied for a visa, we would deny your visa. I hope we would. If you actually end up doing that, once you're in this country on such a visa, we will revoke it.
We don't want you here. We want your ass kicked out of this country. You don't really want to be here because you hate this country, and we don't want your participation in violence. You don't have a right to be here.
And if you end up having a green card, not citizenship, but a green card as a result of that visa while you're here in those activities, we're going to kick you out. It's as simple as that. This is not about free speech. This is about people that don't have a right to be in the United States to begin with. No one has a right to a student visa. No one has a right to a green card, by the way. So when you apply for a student visa or any visa to enter the United States, we have a right to deny you for virtually any reason. But I think being a supporter of Hamas and coming into our universities and turning them upside down and being complicit in what are clearly crimes of vandalization, complicit in shutting down learning institutions. There are kids at these schools that can't go to class. You pay all this money to these high-priced schools that are supposed to be of great esteem, and you can't even go to class. You're afraid to go to class because these lunatics are running around with covers on their face, screaming terrifying things. If you told us that's what you intended to do when you came to America, we would have never let you in. And if you do it once you get in, we're going to revoke it and kick you out.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. Some of this is really not that complicated. The most stunning thing, I think, is that there's people on the left that think it's fine. Ah, you know what? This is the hill that they're dying on. Same thing with the trans sports. It's really quite stunning. Even Fetterman slapped him upside the head today, saying, you guys are idiots. His party, calling him out. But let him do it. I'm a fan of that. All right, let's segue. I thought I'm going to have my bird flu dude on the air from the University of Missouri Extension, and he stood us up. So he might be birthing a cow or something like that out there. I'm not sure what's going on.
I do. His phone was on silent.
Oh, did we just find that out?
Yeah, and then so Fred called him back, and guess what?
He answered.
No answer.
Oh, no, okay. What are you going to do? But let's get a preview. I always like to do this during the major golf events because I'm a fan. The
Players'
Championship is kicking off tomorrow. It's one of the big PGA Tour flagship event. And Dan Reardon, our golf correspondent, no relation, is with us to talk about this afternoon. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mark. You know, for a midweek in March, there's a lot of golf news going on in the last 2 days. You know, you've got Tiger Woods tearing his Achilles. You've got a long press conference from Jay Monahan yesterday with a bunch of LIV questions. And then we have Colin Morikawa lighting up the tee at 17 with a hole-in-one. His caddy.
His caddy. No, that was great. All right, so I want to get to the players. Let's talk about the players, and we'll get to the field and all that. But let's talk about what happened with Jay Monahan yesterday. Because, look, you go back a year and a half, I was having conversations with you, with my friend Brian Katrick at PGA Tour Radio. This merger was going to happen. It hasn't happened. I literally have zero interest in LIV, Dan. I haven't watched anything. I'm more interested in the TGL League that I saw on ESPN. But are they still talking about all this stuff?
The answer to that is yes, Mark, but I would say reading, and Jay Monahan probably had 10, 12 questions about LIV yesterday, and reading through the line, he said nothing. I mean, literally in an hour's time, he said nothing. But reading between the lines, I would say they have very little interest right now. They're committed to the process of negotiating and trying to resolve this thing, but they feel they're in a very good position financially. They're in a very good position with the public. And they're in no race to do things. You know, one of the things that apparently is a sticking point, and the PGA Tour is just not going to back down on it, is LIV wants that team concept to come with them to the PGA Tour. And the PGA Tour is not the least bit interested in changing what they do.
Yeah.
So
I'm not interested in having them change what they do, quite honestly.
And that's what he said. He said, you know, every time he got a question, he said, my focus is on what is best for the PGA Tour and what is best for what we've done in the past. And he said, that's where all my focus is. That doesn't mean we're not negotiating. That doesn't mean we don't want to bring this together. But right now, they're not being pressured into doing anything. They've got the money. They've got the galleries. They got the players. And they're under no pressure right now to give anything back to LIV. Well, now, that's my opinion.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, let's talk about this championship. TPC Sawgrass, it's, you know, legendary because of the island hole. Actually, the closing holes are outstanding. This is also the last year where the field is so big, Dan. They're going to reduce the size of the field next year?
Well, and we've seen, you know, the early indications on that when we went to the signature events, the no-cut events. So this has just been grandfathered in for another year in terms of the big field that they have right now. But, you know, and quite honestly, the depth on the tour is good enough that you can have a guy who's 50th or 60th in the world who could go out and win this championship. We've had people that you would never expect to win this championship win it at times. So it's an event because of the nature of the golf course. And now they're back into March. You know, they spent several years playing in late May. And the golf course is entirely different. JT Thomas talked about this, or JT talked about this yesterday, about how different the golf course plays at this time of the year, and he really likes the way the golf course feels this week.
Well, I'll tell you this. If I'm teeing off at the sixth hole at TPC Sawgrass, I'm hitting that damn overhanging tree. Do you know about this thing? Because that looks like quite the obstacle, even for professionals.
Yeah, they were asked about that. And honestly, Mark, I don't know if that tree has been added since last year. That was the conversation yesterday. Has that tree always been there, or has it been added since that time? So I don't know the answer to that. You know, we've had this over the years. You know, there was a U.S. Open at Inverness where players were playing a short cut down one side of the hole. And in the middle of the U.S. Open Championship, the USGA overnight brought in a tree and blocked their route to go that direction. So these kinds of things are not unusual. What was it earlier this year, I believe? They designated an area as an aerial out of bounds so players wouldn't play shortcuts on hold. So it's not unusual.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's imposing. There's no doubt about that. And there's nothing worse because, as an amateur golfer, this happens all the time. You hit just a towering shot off the tee. Every time I hit a tree, it's the best shot ever. It just hits the damn tree. I'm just being honest. Golfers can they can relate with that, Dan,
sure.
Right?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know if you know the story, Mark, but at Augusta, for the 17th hole, they always had a tree on the left side of the fairway, out where drives would land. And the only member of president who's been a member at Augusta National was Dwight Eisenhower, who had a horrendous slice. And he spent his entire time at Augusta trying to get the membership to cut that tree down because he just couldn't play the hole. And eventually, about 5 years ago, they had an ice storm and the tree came down.
My goodness. That's history right there. That's a great story. All right, so how do you see the tournament playing out? Who's hot right now?
Well, you know, it's easy to go. And Scheffler is not hot, by the way, and he's won two consecutive championships, played well this year, but has not won this year. So, I mean, but it's easy to go with a Morikawa. It's easy to go with McIlroy. It's easy to go with Scheffler, and those are all good choices. I'll give you three names. One is an easy choice, Sadeki Matsuyama. He has really played that golf course extremely well through his career, and he's playing very well this year. He lit it up in Hawaii earlier this year. Another name I'll throw at you is the one I just mentioned a moment ago. I think we're due for Justin Thomas to win a championship somewhere. Now, ideally, he's pointing to Quail Hollow in the PGA Championship where he won the major, but he's played well of late. He just needs to finish on Sunday. And then I'll give you a wild card name who's been out a little bit with injury and has played well since he's gotten back into the tour. I'll give you Daniel Berger as a possibility.
Okay.
Berger is a really talented player. He's sort of a junior version of Xander Schauffele. And if you wanted odds on somebody, I would take a bet and get some odds on
Dan, occasionally I like to do that with professional golf. There's no doubt about it. This is a big, big event. $25 million purse, 4.5 to the winner, 750 FedEx points going to the winner. Only six players in the tournament's history have won more than once. Scheffler looks to join Jack Nicklaus as the only three-time winner. He won the player three times, 74, 76, and 78 in the first 5 years of existence. But we mentioned the island hole. I mean, that's just a blast to watch. And that, you know, not to underestimate, Ethan and I were talking about this, my producer. Look, 18 is a fun hole at this golf course.
It is, you know, and it's just me when I say this, but my criticism of TPC Sawgrass is that Pete Dye dug a lot of holes in the ground and filled them with water. And I think anybody can make a great golf course challenging by throwing enough water out on the course. And my problem with the water is if you make a mistake at Sawgrass, it's not a one-stroke mistake, it's a two-stroke mistake because you're going to get penalized in that situation. And 18 is a classic example of that. 17 is like 130 yards. I mean, the pros should really be able to play that unless they're high wind. They've got a wedge in their hand. But that's as you go through the golf course, there's an awful lot of what I consider penalty holes.
Yeah, no, and I understand that. And that's why I would never want to play myself there. But I love it when they – that's amazing, though. Is the island hole really only 130 yards from the tee box? That is short.
Yeah, it's. I mean, they can stretch it a little bit, but they generally play it at 130, 140, something like that.
Interesting. All right, we can watch on Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and the ESP streaming hub if you want to watch all the time. And then I think they have regular coverage on the weekend, probably on CBS, am I gathering? Or is this all ESPN, Dan? Do you know?
No. This is scattered across multiple platforms. And without going into detail, you do want to go and look at JJ's hole-in-one in the caddy closest to the pin process of 17. When you put a bunch of caddies on the tee in a competition and somebody knocks it in the hole, you're going to see a celebration like you never
seen. It was fun. It's up on Twitter. I saw. I don't know if I retweeted this. I'll try to. But yeah, it's Colin Morikawa's caddy, and the excitement after they know he lands it a little past the hole is a lot too, and it kind of rolls back right into the cup, and they go crazy. It was a really, really fun moment.
And all the caddies put money into a pot, and the closest to the hole, which is him, wins the pot, and the PGA Tour matches whatever the caddies have put into the pot. Now,
oh, my gosh, I love that. I didn't know that, Dan. That's cool.
But should Morikawa win on Sunday, it'll pale by comparison when the payout
there. $4.5 million, certainly. Dan Reardon, awesome. We'll get some updates over the next couple of days at the Players' Championship, TPC Sawgrass. Thank you, Dan.
Enjoyed it, Mark.
All right, audio cut of the day is coming up. What's that temperature right now, Sue? Do you know?
Stand by, please.
Here, let's find out.
79, according to my watch.
Oh, my goodness. There was like a 10 degree difference in my house from the basement to the upstairs.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved it, by the way.
Yes.
I have the furnace off for a few days. We have Fish Fry Fridays continuing this Friday at the Knights of Columbus Hall in Cottleville. Holy smokes, I'm looking at the clock here, so I have to do audio cut of the day. And I may have to shorten it just a little bit because I didn't pay attention.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, let me see if I can get this in. There's violence that is occurring to Tesla owners and the Tesla dealerships over Elon Musk. But listen to the coverage on MSNBC here.
Overnight, have this post claiming that protests at Tesla dealerships are illegal. He said today he would label violence against dealerships domestic terrorism. Now, you know I am judicious in how I play this sound, but I think you need to hear it from him.
All right, so remember what she said there. Violence. Violence. She even pointed it out.
Mr. President, talks about some of the violence that's been going on around the country at dealerships. Some say they should be labeled domestic terrorists.
I'll do it. I'm going to stop them. We catch anybody doing it because they're harming a great American company. Let me tell you, you do it to Tesla and you do it to any company, we're going to catch you and you're going to go through hell.
So just to be clear, you protest a private company, you are labeled by this administration a domestic terrorist.
She's an idiot. I mean, he said violence. You even said violence in your intro to the soundbite, yeah. But that's how you want to play it. This is how dishonest they are. That's why I no longer feel that Trump was wrong when he said the media is the enemy of the people, because that is the enemy of the people. We'll talk tomorrow at 3. Have a great night.
Get more at 971talk.com.